All right. Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's news from the Drug War Front. My name is Jeff and my co-presenter is Marion. Good morning to you, Marion.
Good morning, Jeffrey, and good morning, listener. Isn't it a beautiful morning, Jeffrey? Sunshine and...
I love autumn in Canberra. Yeah. It's the best season.
Yeah. My son is so looking forward to winter, but I just look forward to a long kind of Indian summer. I guess we're allowed to still call it that. It just travels through until about Easter. Yeah, normally that's when we think, Canberrans think that our summer finishes, about Easter.
I think when I arrived in Canberra, somebody said to me Anzac Day was often the first glimpse of...
cold weather.
Yeah, a cold. Yeah. I don't know whether that holds true.
That's because they go out at 5 o'clock in the morning for the dawn service.
It's pretty cold.
That's when they find out how bloody cold it is outside in the morning.
Absolutely. No, it's cold at 5 in the morning. I went to a dawn service when I used to work for Veterans Affairs in Melbourne.
Did you? And you went to the dawn service.
Yeah.
When I was young, I did too, Jeffrey, every year.
It's pretty powerful, isn't it?
It is really potent, actually. And because the bugle is such a, it's got such an emotive sound, and it's it's music by itself. It's solo and it echoes beautifully down Anzac Parade through the Shrine of Remembrance inside, and then down through the War Memorial itself, and down, you can hear it down the end of Anzac Parade. It's really quite potent, really emotive.
Well, it's important when you look at per capita the contribution of Australia and New Zealand to...
And you look at how many people that went over to any war and came back drug dependent.
Yes.
Dylan. I mean, we know that, for instance, the United States conscripted so many of their young men, and how many of them went into rehab, like went into hospital the minute they hit the shore, didn't even go home, straight into a hospital.
Yep.
It was tens of thousands of them, Jeffrey.
Well, war is brutal. How do you,
And it's horrible to see, horrible to think about, and some of the stuff that these poor conscripts were doing, Jeffrey, was just... It's anathema to them. They couldn't dream that that's what they would be doing in their future, and that what were they fighting for? Well, it was a police action.
Yeah,
they
that's
called
the other
it
thing
to start with. It wasn't even a war.
What was it
and
all about?
And then when they came back, nobody said welcome back. Remember, for Australia, it was years later they had the welcome home parade.
More like 25, wasn't it?
Oh,
it was,
I don't know, Jeffrey. It was a long time afterwards. Anyway, that's all I do remember.
It took a long time.
It took a long time for them to twig. And the conscripts and the people that fought in Vietnam weren't allowed in the RSLs. They weren't accepted as members. Mm. Not real soldiers. Pissed
How outrageous,
off.
Yeah.
That was
really
just
disgraceful.
Wrong.
Yeah.
And no women and no black people, you know, no Indigenous. We had Indigenous troops, but did they care?
Did they get recognition?
No.
All right, listeners, welcome to this week's news from the Drug War Front, brought to you by KARMA, the Canberra Alliance for Harm Minimisation and Advocacy. KARMA is a peer-based, community-controlled drug user organisation. The development of the Needle and Syringe Program, or NSP, expansion of opioid maintenance treatments, that's methadone and buprenorphine, and the funding of drug user organisations began as part of the highly successful public health response to the HIV/AIDS epidemic in Australia back in the 1980s.
Indeed, we did.
And it was rightly given praise the world over, Aaron.
Absolutely. You know. We had pride of place, Jeffrey, in the early days in, 1984, I think, was when I started working at DRIC. And 85, I think we started the National Campaign Against Drug Abuse. It was just a funding round, National Campaign Against Drug Abuse and National Campaign on HIV and AIDS. And both of those programs provided more funding, particularly to community-based organisations. But it was the instigation or the initiation, I guess, of peer education and the concept of peers teaching each other. When look at anybody, the best way to accept information or education is with somebody who's on the same level as you. Not somebody who's preaching at you.
Yeah.
Not somebody who is pleading with you. Somebody who's on your... no power differential, Jeffrey. Great way to get educational messages across.
It works.
And the messages were... I mean, they were potent and they were appropriate and they were person to person. So, yes, it worked.
Yeah. So by involving affected communities, Australia was able to keep HIV infection rates at very low by global standards. Of course, there's other viruses that affect injecting drug users, especially hepatitis C. And of course, we now have new treatments known as direct-acting antivirals, or DAAs, that have very high cure rates, like 95% or even higher, to cure people with hepatitis C.
I saw a friend of mine who'd just come off the program, just done the Hep C treatment.
Yeah. And
oh, Jeffrey, he looked fabulous. Oh, g'day, Maxie. You looked wonderful the other day. I was so impressed.
Oh, isn't that great?
He looked so healthy. He had such... He said he felt way better, yeah?
Fantastic.
He was there in town with his dog. Now, I hadn't seen him for ages, so that must have been the time he was on the
doing the treatment.
The treatment. But, yeah, he looked so well. I was really impressed. And that's the first time I can think of that I've seen somebody directly after they've done the treatment.
Notice the before and after. Yeah.
So, I was really
wonderful.
Impressed.
Ah, that's fabulous.
Yep.
And sadly, a lot of people who are Hep C positive are still reticent to do the new treatments because of memories of the interferon.
Well, the interferon was so
horrible
nasty,
side effects.
Wasn't it?
And, yeah.
I think a lot of people had trouble with that. Yeah. But
yeah,
it's nothing like that.
No.
That's what Max said, nothing like that. He felt fine. No side effects.
Wow.
No unintended effects. He was fine. I was so pleased and really good to get that direct information, Jeffrey. Plenty of people say there's no problem with it. There aren't any side effects. But until you hear from somebody, as I was just saying when you were doing the introduction, how meaningful it is when you hear from somebody on the same level. Yeah?
Absolutely.
He said to me, just finished and I feel great.
Oh, that's wonderful. I actually think a really good way to try and allay people's fears is if we had short video messages from people like that.
Yeah, from people who'd done the treatment.
Who can say, I've just been through the treatment and I feel so much better.
And in language that we understand, Jeffrey, not like coming down from the government, because we've had so much bull come through the government, propaganda.
Yeah.
There's
not a lot
apologize,
of trust. Yeah.
Just don't do it. Just behave yourself. And a kind of offhanded stuff, whereas we care about our community because it's us.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be us any minute, and it is us any minute.
Yeah.
So, great way to do it. I think it's a really good idea. Think about it, people out there. Make a little video. Put it on YouTube. If you've done treatment, fuzz out your face or put a mask on if you want to.
Yeah, don't have to identify
just
yourself.
Just tell users that you've done it and how much impact it had on you, whether it affected you. It's really easy to do, from what I understand, to do your own video these days and get it out on a podcast of some sort or just send it out via YouTube.
Yeah.
And just let people know how easy the treatment is to do and how effective and what it feels like to not have a heavy liver, because I'm pretty sure that people feel pretty bad when their liver is affected with Hep C.
And brain fog and lethargy
And you see people walking around. I've seen people walking around with their livers swollen. Sorry, other side.
Yeah.
But it looks pretty awful and painful and you don't want to go out that way.
Oh, look,
not
I've,
good.
I've seen firsthand a couple of friends go out that way with the bloated abdomen and the liver cancer
and it's just
it's horrendous, man.
That was I'm pretty sure that the people that I saw was when we didn't have the new treatments available, Jeffrey, that interferon was what was
interferon,
there and that's enough to freak anybody out. But the new treatments and no
nothing
side
like
effects,
it.
No headaches, no nausea, except what is already in existence from the hepatitis, but it starts to clear up. What's the maximum? About 12 weeks, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's a treatment, the length of time that you have to be taking these drugs is
12 pill
weeks.
A day. It's not
one pill a
drastic,
day.
You know.
So, I think it's great. It's so exciting to have that available.
Oh, it's one of the great breakthroughs for our community.
Look at Johnson & Johnson. We've got maybe a new one-shot wonder for the
COVID
vaccine.
It's been approved, hasn't it?
Might be good, whereas everything else is at least
two-shot
treatments.
Okay, sadly, as the policies of prohibition remain largely unchanged, human rights abuses and the stigmatising and discrimination of people who use drugs continues to take place. And we'd like to acknowledge the efforts of peers and activists who have contributed to the fight against prohibition and reaffirm our commitment to continue fighting against the harms caused by prohibition in all of its manifestations.
Yeah.
So obviously the show aims to inform and educate listeners about the failure of prohibition or the war on people who use drugs. And, of course, we also promote the services offered by KARMA and other organisations in the ACT, Maren.
Yeah. Do you think we might have a song now, Geoffrey, before we go on to the next bit?
Yes.
Would that be okay?
This is a shout-out to Jude. It's one of her favourite songs, I know, without a doubt. It's Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, and it's Into My Arms.
Hello, darling, get better. That's beautiful.
That is a beautiful song, isn't it?
It is beautiful.
Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Into My Arms.
That's for you, Jude, my darling. Okay, the Canberra Alliance for Harm Minimisation and Advocacy, my dears, is Canberra's only peer-based drug user group. KARMA provides a wide range of services such as client advocacy, peer treatment support, education, information, creative arts, mentoring and referrals. The office is located in the Church's Centre at Shop 17, Level 1, 54 Benjamin Way in Belconnen. Office hours are 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday to Friday, and the KARMA number, the phone line, landline number, is 6253 3643. I'll say that again, 6253 3643. So keep a note of that. If you want to know what KARMA provides or if you want to make use of its services, just ring the landline, the main number, and you will be put onto somebody who will refer you to the appropriate service. If KARMA can't provide it for you, they'll tell you where to go.
Yeah.
Well, politely.
It's best
they'll tell you how to get what you need.
Well, hopefully the service will be available. I mean,
absolutely. They won't tell you rudely unless you are rude to them. It's only about respect, mutual respect. And we don't get a real lot of that, let's face it.
No.
So be respectful to each other. I'm very sick of seeing and hearing drug users call each other junkies. It's bad enough to have a hierarchy of acceptable addictions, if you like, or dependencies, you know, where it's okay to be an alcoholic but it's not okay to be a heroin user.
Yeah, it's sad to hear people disparage each other, isn't it?
And I just think it's a waste of energy. And
that too.
Where do people get off calling a peer a junkie when it's used in a disparaging and disrespectful term?
Yeah. No, I agree completely.
Who has that right?
No
one.
You
know, I can call myself that, but no. Bugger off, anybody else wants to do that to me. I just don't approve of it. And I approve of a whole stack of things that other people won't put up with.
Pretty liberally
that's
minded.
One of them I won't. Anyway, KARMA continues to run its Australian first opioid overdose recognition and response with naloxone workshops, which is a hell of a long title for it. But they are very good workshops, and also does brief interventions with individual clients, which means after you do the 1.5 hours of training, you'll know how to do rescue breathing and also how to provide naloxone to people who have overdosed on opiates.
Yeah.
The only thing naloxone does, but it does it well, is reverse the effects of opiates, of opiate overdose or opioid overdose.
Yes.
So that's what we use it for. Now, what we're providing at the moment through the workshops is a nasal spray. We also can provide, or used to provide, the injectables that came in ampules. But in fact, because they're a bit difficult to manage, I think it's quite wise that Dave and Damo have opted now for the nasal spray, and that will work within 20, 30 seconds anyway, because it's absorbed through the mucous membrane quite quickly.
Yes.
Nearly as quickly as it is giving an injection, an intramuscular injection, in
fact. All reports have been positive.
Yes.
About
and it's a higher dose, of course, because an intramuscular injection can be a lower dose because it goes into the bloodstream quite quickly.
Yeah.
But the absorption through the mucous membrane must be at a higher dose because there will be some loss of the dose just
but it
in
still
spraying
works,
it.
And it still will
but it
bring
still
you back.
Works, but it will only work on opioids.
Yep.
Okay, so KARMA can help with a wide range of issues, including opioid maintenance treatment programs, that's methadone or buprenorphine, and more recently the new long-lasting injectable forms of buprenorphine, known as Buvidal and Sublocade. People need to think carefully about when they're going on, if they want to go on to that program. It's often used as a substitute for when either to give people a little bit more freedom or for when they want to come down before they want to jump off their maintenance, opioid maintenance program altogether. Well, substitution program.
For me, I think the best advantage of having the weekly or injectable or monthly injectable buprenorphine is if you're out in a remote area.
Yeah,
and to travel is, you know, an issue. Where,
always has been an issue, hasn't it? And there are lots of people in rural New South Wales who just don't have access to a local doctor that they feel they can go and see and talk about a...
issues that are...
an opioid dependence issue.
Yeah.
And even if they could talk to the doctor, that, you know, the capability of gossip to get out, you know, leaks through windows and under doors in small town, country towns.
It's one of the drawbacks.
You just can't make sure that you will be anonymous.
Yeah.
And then you go to a chemist and pick up your dose and, you know, that's it, you're blown.
Everyone knows.
Everybody knows. And maybe everybody knows anyway.
Yeah.
But the point is you need to feel like you have some privacy. Okay, so the more stuff that Karma provides is the availability or information on the availability of detox and rehab services in and about the ACT. The negative impact of stigma and discrimination, which is a really big issue for us and has been for a long time. Difficulties with getting access to proper pain relief. I don't know how many times we have to say that, but because somebody is on opioid substitution programs, is more inclined to mean that they need a higher dose of pain relief, not a lower dose. Mm. You're not going to overdose somebody by giving them... I mean, if somebody's on a large dose of methadone, you can double that dose for pain relief, at least, at minimum. And I'm horrified to think that doctors would be thinking of any other way of providing pain relief to somebody who's on the methadone program.
Well, you know my opinion, Maren. I've said it many times. I've always believed that access to proper pain relief is a fundamental human right.
Absolutely. And you would not believe... Remember, Jeffrey, I told you when input brought out its human rights issue, you know, its rights for drug users, I thought, oh, I've got some. So we may all be surprised to know that we actually are entitled to human rights. And pain relief, I agree with you, Jeffrey, should be fundamental. It's as important as having somewhere to sleep, something to eat, and someone to cuddle. Yeah?
Yeah.
It is that important, being able to live pain-free. And I don't know how many people actually do live pain-free, but I think it ought to be an expectation that you can live your life pain-free.
Absolutely. I noticed just slightly on another subject, but still related, the issue of euthanasia. Like 27 years ago, the Northern Territory passed a bill for legalising euthanasia that got vetoed by the federal government.
Yes.
Well, I saw something, I think 2 days ago, about moves within the Northern Territory government to bring that
to re-establish
euthanasia and saying we want our rights as Northern Territorians.
And Kevin Andrews in Victoria, they brought up a bill for euthanasia because, in particular, I think Kevin Andrews' father, I think at the time, was dying, but it was a very personal issue for them. And they brought up a bill to have euthanasia available in Victoria. Again, the Commonwealth government stepped in and trod on it. But the bill is nonetheless on the books in Victoria. And as soon as the Commonwealth government sees fit to stop interfering in states' rights, then we may have the availability of euthanasia in other places as well.
I hope so.
And it is a very sympathetic approach to death and dying. For those people who are in chronic pain and will never have anything else but that pain, and their lives, they feel, are not worth living.
Yeah, surely.
And should have the right to choose between being alive and being dead.
I agree.
That is their right. Anyway, I think that that's another one of the issues that Karma can help with, not with euthanasia, I'm sorry, but all issues faced by people adversely impacted by prohibition and the war on people who use drugs.
Yeah,
really,
sadly there are many
stuff.
Yep. Many issues. Okay, the contents of this News from the Drug War Front broadcast do not necessarily reflect the views and or policies of the Canberra Alliance for Harm Minimisation and Advocacy. Karma does not condone nor condemn drug use and does not promote illegal activity. Karma recognises that drug use happens, and as such, Karma focuses on harm reduction messages, drug treatment support services, advocacy and community development. Karma seeks to reduce the harms associated with drug use as well as the harms associated with the criminalisation of drug use through the provision of empowering programs that concentrate on community development, person-centred holistic healthcare and equity of health service delivery for all people.
Indeed.
So I thought we might go to a song, Matt. Yeah, you've provided this CD. Oh, it's Helen Reddy, The Definitive Collection. I think I Am Woman.
Yes, let's have that just for a change.
It's a classic, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's International Women's Day next Monday, International Sex Workers, Human Sex Workers Rights Day tomorrow. And all week it is Mardi Gras week, so LGBTQI people, especially LGBTQI drug users, we love you.
We do. Here's Helen Reddy. All right, welcome back to News from the Drug War Front. It's about 4 minutes after 11 o'clock. I just wanted to mention that the next date for the Karma Opioid Overdose Recognition and Response with Naloxone workshop, Marion's right, that is a mouthful, is scheduled for March the 30th at 2 p.m. at the Early Morning Centre. If you'd like to book a place or make inquiries or find out information about the Naloxone program, call Dave or Damo on the Karma office number 6253-3643. That's 6253-3643. Now, we mentioned before about hepatitis C, and it was nice to hear Marion see a friend of hers who has successfully completed the direct-acting antiviral treatment and is much the better and healthier for it. I thought I'd talk about a report from the Kirby Institute, which sadly has found that hepatitis C testing and treatment has been on the decline in Australia. And the subheading is, the report shows that stigma remains very high despite access to these highly effective treatments. And it says fewer Australians are seeking testing and treatment for hepatitis C, according to the report from Burnett and Kirby Institutes, monitoring Australia's progress in trying to eliminate hepatitis C. When the direct-acting antivirals, or DAAs, were added to the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme, or PBS, in 2016, the treatments became affordable and accessible, and the initial uptake was very high. The decline in testing and treatment during 2019 is a signal for action. Mm-hmm. Professor Margaret Hellard, who's Deputy Director at Burnett Institute, who was one of the authors of the report, said, quotation, "The report clearly shows the improved health outcomes that direct-acting antivirals deliver. People are achieving cure after accessing treatment and they are living free from hepatitis C." Mm. Very importantly. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, well, we can vouch for that, can't we?
Yeah.
Just having that personal... and, yeah, we should have some more of those on the, as we said, on the internet. Put them out there. Let people know it's okay to go on those DAAs. It's really useful. Terrific treatment.
And don't be scared that it's going to be similar or, you know,
like,
to the interferon-based
like
treatments.
Old days.
Yeah,
and
no.
Finally, somebody has done something for users that's helpful, but it's actually for Hep C infected people. So it's not directly for users, but as we know, Hep C users are many and varied, yeah?
And a lot of people don't know their status as well.
No, they don't, and should actually get tested for it these days, because once you know your status, you can get onto those treatments if you need them straight away.
And they're on the PBS.
Absolutely.
It's yeah,
all available for you.
It's there and waiting for you.
Yep.
Yep. Okay, Professor Margaret Hellard said, quote, "Now is a pivotal time in the effort to eliminate hepatitis C in Australia. After great success in the first few years that direct-acting antivirals were available, we are now seeing a decline in hepatitis C testing and treatment uptake. We need to review, renew and refocus our efforts engaging with key affected populations to ensure hepatitis C testing and treatment is easily accessible to the people who need it, when they need it and where they need it."
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's really important. It's got to be at the time that people are ready to do it, and it's got to be in a place where they can get to it, yeah?
Well, the good thing now is it can just be done through your GP. You don't have to go and make an appointment at a liver clinic or hospital or see a specialist. It's
And really, because hepatitis C affects so many people, not just users, but people who've been associated with users who've had maybe non-A, non-B, or were tested and found positive for non-A, non-B in the old days when that was what it was called.
Was what it was known as, yeah.
And then it was identified, I think it was 99 or so, was it, Jeffrey?
Can't remember exactly, Maz, but
late
yeah.
Late 90s, I think.
It finally got its own
identified as hepatitis
letter.
C. Because I remember the first pamphlet coming out through the users group, and it was actually called the alphabet of hepatitis.
Ah.
Yeah, it was a really clever idea.
Very clever. Mm. Now, the Kirby Institute's Professor Gregory Dorr, who's one of the leading experts in this area of Hep C, who is a co-author of the report, agreed that it is critical to sustain and enhance hepatitis C elimination efforts, and is quoted as saying, "Australia has done exceptionally well at delivering direct acting antiviral treatment and therapies and connecting the most at-risk populations with testing and treatment. But this report brings together data from across the country and gives us a good picture of how we're tracking. The key moving forward will be to use novel testing technologies and innovative screening initiatives to increase diagnosis and linkage to highly curative treatments, whilst also maintaining prevention initiatives such as needle and syringe programs."
And I guess,
of course,
the peer education from peer groups
is crucial.
Is
yeah.
really fundamental.
Absolutely
to it
fundamental.
Being successful, isn't
yeah.
it?
I couldn't agree.
And if we didn't have those, if we didn't have CARMAs around Australia, we wouldn't have that access to users that we do. If we didn't have the radio show, we wouldn't have this act.
Well, it's another reason why peer, like you said before, peer education is so unique and important.
And it's incredibly clever of Australia to have maintained the availability and funding of user groups, because stuff keeps coming up for users, and that's the only way we contact people directly is by having peer education programs.
Yeah.
And I must say, it's probably time we had another national education program, Jeffrey, because
Absolutely.
COVID has taken over
yeah,
so much
yes.
of the conversation
yep.
these days. I've got to say, if I hear that term again, you know, I'm so sick of hearing the language associated with COVID, you know, unprecedented.
Yeah,
but yes, pandemics are, as a rule, unprecedented in
yeah.
one way or another. Hepatitis C has precedence, but it's still there. So we still need people to get tested and make themselves available for treatment
yeah.
because that's there for you. And unlike COVID, we can cure hepatitis
yeah.
C.
Yeah.
And that'll bring your liver back into focus, darling. You'll be able to use or drink or whatever with relative safety, because at least you're not knocking your liver to bits anymore.
And the mental clarity and, you know, the end of what they call brain fog
yes.
has been really important
yeah.
for people.
And remember, we've actually said many times on the show that the one thing that... I know a lot of users are keen to donate their organs to people who might need them.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing you can be sure of after you've had the DAA or the direct acting antiviral treatment is that your liver will be in such a good condition.
It would
no
be
matter, it will
available,
be available
yeah.
for donation. And that we found that out when one of our friends died. The only thing that was available and acceptable for donation was his liver.
How extraordinary.
It was, and I was gobsmacked.
Yeah.
Very proud that he had wanted to donate organs.
Yeah.
But gobsmacked to find that his liver was in such good condition
that it could
after
be
after really quite heavy use
yeah.
and drinking.
Wow.
That it was in such a good condition that it could be donated to someone else.
Yeah, these new treatments are just
fabulous.
A total paradigm shift. They really are.
Completely, yep.
This was the first year that the report included information from the prison system, which showed that an estimated 29% of people treated for Hep C in 2019 were treated within the prison system.
Oh.
And Greg Dawes quoted as saying, "Within the prison system, we have an opportunity to use new rapid testing technologies to enhance linkage to care. With the high prevalence of Hep C in prisons, but often relatively short incarceration periods in remand settings, it is vital that we quickly test and connect people with these curative treatments and also support."
Yeah, I think that was where it was first trialled, wasn't it? It was in prisons because they had a captive population as such. But such a good result that it actually then was rolled out to the rest of the population. The article goes on, more than 20 research, clinical, community and government partners across the country provided their data to Burnett and Kirby researchers to produce the report on Australia's progress towards hepatitis C elimination. Australia's National Hepatitis C Strategy from 2018 to 2022 committed to eliminate hepatitis C in alignment with global targets set by the World Health Organization. Setting this goal was made possible with strong political leadership, opening up universal access to direct-acting antiviral therapy, backed up by an active community of partners to implement the strategy. The Burnett-Kirby report key findings, it's the next heading. Okay, the key findings were, one, a decline in newly acquired hepatitis C infections appeared using data from primary health care clinics that see people who inject drugs and gay and bisexual men. Treatment uptake peaked in the months following the listing of DAAs or drug direct acting antivirals on the pharmaceutical benefits scheme, that was March 2016, but has since slowed. The third thing was a decline in liver transplants with hepatitis C as primary diagnosis, which for us now would not be surprising, but I bet it was for Burnett Kirby, because it means people's livers were recovering from the damage that would have been caused over the years. Mm. It goes on, testing for hepatitis C has declined, particularly testing for hepatitis C RNA to detect new hepatitis C infections. It goes on, an estimated 29% of people treated in 2019 were treated in prison. Stigma and discrimination towards people who inject drugs and people living with hepatitis C remains prevalent. Like, wasn't something we didn't know, Jeffrey, but because this is the capital R research, not the capital A anecdotal,
yeah,
it is true. And this raises concerns about how this may be affecting individuals' access to healthcare. Another key finding, a need to focus on primary prevention still exists. Reports of receptive sharing needles and syringes has remained the same, which is a shame and actually quite disappointing.
Mm.
Prevention efforts need to include improved access to sterile needles and syringing or injecting equipment to reduce sharing among people who inject drugs and expanding health promotion activities. And that, for me, includes the rural settings where really the availability of clean, safe injecting equipment is very limited. Certainly the major capital cities it's available, but availability out in rural areas is really difficult.
There needs to be a re-examination
About it some more and maybe really peer education, provision of NSP or needle and syringe programs is a primary initiative I would have thought would have been really useful, but it's not perceived for some reason as useful as we think it can be.
And the crazy thing, it saves the health budget money.
Huge amounts of money. You know, drug users are a big drain on the system, but people with hepatitis C, chronic hepatitis C, have really sad outcomes if they don't get those DAA treatments. Improved access to treatment is needed in rural and remote areas, just as I was saying. Mapping of treatment uptake in Australia shows inequity in opportunity and uptake needs that need to be addressed. Okay, the last finding, modelling in the report highlights that increasing testing, diagnosis and linkage to care is essential for Australians to achieve elimination of hepatitis C.
Well, this is a very timely report because
it is.
The initial uptake, there was a whole, lots of people ready, just waiting for the PBS to approve direct-acting antivirals, and they were ready to go.
Yep.
And so there was, very...
But some of them just fall off that waiting list if it's not available and not accessible, they live.
I think the problem now, Marion, is it's the harder to reach...
The more difficult to reach population, indeed. And that again, comes down to rural and remote regions, Jeffrey, because people don't want to stand up and be counted. We go back to the issue of privacy in a country town, yeah. or if you're living on a station and you spent 2 years in the big city and during that time you came in touch with injectors or yep. you actually injected
yourself
or
yeah.
had sex with people, you know, it's just an important issue and it really we've got to look at the hard-to-reach populations, which means more projects to contact the at-risk population,
yes.
the people who might already have Hep C, who may even know they have Hep C, but are not prepared to seek out treatment.
Yep.
Treatment needs to seek them out.
Mm.
We need to seek them out and we need to be funded to do that.
Absolutely.
And I'm really a bit tired of a federal government that's not prepared to say, oops, sorry, we've let someone slip through the cracks. I'm really sick of people slipping through the cracks, mm. Jeffrey. Why have we got cracks in our healthcare system? We shouldn't have them. We've had national investigations into, for instance, aged care. We
yeah,
have a
terrible.
Federal government yeah. that's not even prepared to say, oops, that was our responsibility mm. and we slipped. And they don't say that.
Mm.
How many things have we had over the last couple of months where government said it's not, you know, government just doesn't say, sorry, we didn't mean to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lack of accountability. There's a lack of big picture, you know, looking at things systemically. It's all...
Well, and look, we look at the aged people report, right, the aged care. What they've said is it needs, what, somewhere in the region of $4 billion or something dollars to actually improve the aged care system from a federal funding perspective. What's the federal government going to provide? $452.2 million.
It's not going to do much.
No, it's the yeah. B word, the billion word. That's yeah. what's required. And it's over years. It's got to improve that system because we're going to be there in a minute. I don't care
absolutely.
What the politicians
yeah.
think. They're going to be
there. Everyone's going to be
and
there.
And if they're not looking out for their own
yep.
support and their own healthcare needs, which is what they have to do, is consider that there, but for the grace of God, go on.
Yeah, the clock doesn't stop for anyone, Maren.
No.
We're all one day older every day. You know.
Yeah. I'm already old, okay? I'm not looking forward, don't want to go into residential care for old people who are dotty. Well, I'm going to be dotty in a minute. I'm already forgetting words, Jeffrey. When we come into the studio, you
yeah.
know I have to chase words around yep. in my head. You can see me doing it.
Yeah. Yep.
So I don't know how long before I'm not going to be able to do stuff for myself, but I don't want to be in a position where I have to go into a residential care where I'm going to be bashed,
yeah,
sexually assaulted,
yeah.
mistreated, abused, insulted, and basically treated like a useless piece
yeah.
of work after I've contributed for years to my world
yes.
and the health of my colleagues and my peers and through them, the rest of the population.
Absolutely.
I feel like I'm entitled to a bit of respect no matter what my behaviour is like at the moment. If I'm not insulting somebody else or offending somebody else by my breathing, then why should they not respect me when mm. I'm showing them respect?
Yeah, I
and
agree completely.
I just am appalled
yeah.
at that. You know, even the interim, they've 124 recommendations they had in the interim report, Jeffrey, and that was put out, what, last August. They've only got about another 16 more recommendations in the ultimate report,
mm.
which is in, I think, four volumes, they said this morning on the ABC. So it's a substantial report. There were disagreements between the two. Well, you would hope there'd be some
yeah.
kind of disagreement, but it's more about
how to
who's going to fund
yeah.
what,
yeah.
yeah, where the responsibility lies. Nonetheless, with only 16 more recommendations in that report, why haven't we already started to improve it? Why wait for the outcome of the report to think, well, you know, we can't fund anything until we see the full report. We'll wait until the budget comes. No. Don't wait till it. We've waited too long already.
We need action. Yeah.
Yeah. Action is what's required.
Yeah.
And it should have been from day one. There are always things that you can see need to be done. Just because the research hasn't come in to say so doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Yeah, problems don't exist and you can't see them. You can see them.
It comes down to priorities, Marion, and it comes down to ideology. And if you think that all these things are best run for profit, you know, market driven, approach, no, certain things are actually best done by the government and
absolutely when it's their sector. Responsibility.
Yeah. You know,
how come the government's not even copping to the fact that where did the responsibility lie for the importation of COVID? Wasn't it aboard those ships?
Well, there was some major.
Didn't that come initially from the princesses, the various princesses around the world that were sailing into Sydney Harbour?
Yeah.
That's where it came from. That was government federal government responsibility, and that was a fight to start with about who's responsible for this.
Well, we don't want blame
Doesn't
shifting.
Doesn't matter.
No.
Who cares about it?
No.
Just as long as something comes out of it.
And we learn something.
Yes, have
so it
an
doesn't
argument,
happen again.
Have the discussion, but get things rolling.
Yeah.
Get stuff happening.
Yeah. No, look, we have governments and pay taxes for a reason to actually provide services and look after vulnerable
and
citizens.
And not find it so damn hard to do so, yeah? I know it's now March, right? We know there are people sitting around going, so aren't we getting another $250 from the government from March the 1st? We know full well government's not going to do that till the last possible day. It'll be March the 30th or the 31st, yeah, before the government gets that $250 out to the people who are expecting it. That's people on pensions and benefits. And because they have generously raised the job seeker.
What was it, $4.50 or
$3.50 a day. Yeah. Jeffrey, that's barely 3 litres of milk.
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's not really going to solve.
It's not going to make a change. And it's not going to. People were saying, oh, look, I can eat 3 times a day. I mean, fancy a place like Australia.
It's just
having to have its citizens say, wow, I'm on unemployment benefits, but I can eat 3 times a day. What a relief.
Wow.
Well, I think that's a damn shame.
Yeah.
We should be ashamed of ourselves for that level of support.
I agree.
Which means people on not just on unemployment benefits, but people who are on pensions as well, who weren't getting as much as the job seeker payment, maybe about the same. But I tell you, living on an aged pension, you barely can eat 3 times a day.
Yeah,
you certainly can't afford to run a car.
You have to be frugal and
we are lucky
economize.
With our local government that we can get free transport during the day in off-peak times. But really, we need federal focus on this and we need more than $3.50 a day for unemployed people. You need a healthy population to be available to be employed.
Yes.
And if you're not fed, you're not healthy.
No.
If you're not housed, you're not healthy.
No, it's disconnect from reality.
It is.
It really is.
We just need people to understand that. Come on, government.
Yeah.
Up and at 'em.
All right. Given the various events that have been celebrated in the coming week, I thought I'd play The Whore's Hustle and The Hustler's Whore by PJ Harvey. It's a pretty good song. This is PJ
Absolutely.
Harvey.
Yeah, do that one.
It's a good one. All right, that was PJ Harvey with The Whore's Hustle and The Hustler's Whore. You're listening to News from the Drug War Front on 2XX Community Radio, People Powered Radio.
98.3
FM.
Yeah, 2XX FM.
Just quickly, I want to do a shout out for 2XX, just as how important a community radio station is.
Please do.
To, you know, it's dependent on supporters. So if you like
Individual,
our show or any of the other shows, seriously consider becoming a supporter. 2XX provides access to individuals and groups to participate in creating a diverse alternative to mainstream radio with an emphasis on our local community. And we really appreciate 2XX. And
we do. We love it. The fact that we can come in and we can talk about the stuff that is important to us and you too can do that All you need to do is subscribe to 2XX. It's not expensive. Once you get in touch with 2XX, they will get in touch with you. You can subscribe. You can support its operation and its funding. And you can have your voice heard.
Yeah.
Like we do.
You can volunteer. Yeah. You can learn skills.
You can learn how to run a radio, be in a radio station. Yeah. You can learn how to speak publicly,
yeah,
which is what we do every week. Although I must admit, consider it's just you, me, and one other.
Hopefully, but more.
It's a really useful skill to have, and it's useful to know that you can have your voice heard by the rest of the world and by Canberra.
Yeah.
And Canberra's a potent place to have your voice heard, I can tell you
right
now.
Indeed it is.
A lot of influence available in Canberra,
yeah,
if not power, depending upon where you live and what you do for a job.
More power to 2XX.
Absolutely. I'd like to just got some feedback from one of our listeners. Hepatitis C is a really important issue. As you know, we were talking about that just now. If you ring Karma or the Hepatitis C Council and leave your number, 6253 3643, and I don't have the Hep C Council's number on me right now.
I think they're called Hepatitis ACT now.
ACT, yeah, beg your pardon. But they are jointly running a peer education program for people who have Hep C and for people who have had Hep C but have used either the direct acting antivirals but have cured themselves, been cured of hepatitis C, and would like to be a peer educator. So you can ring Karma on 6253 3643, put down your name and telephone number. They are running a project which includes workshops, testing, and all about hepatitis C and the direct acting antiretrovirals. You can learn to become a peer educator, because that's what you are. Once you've had Hep C, or if you still have Hep C, and during the time that you are learning to become a peer educator, you actually undergo, say, the treatment regime or the DAA treatment regime, you can become a peer educator. And anybody who listens to the show will know how potent peer education is. What we say in here, you can believe because we are saying it and we believe it. Now, it doesn't necessarily make it right, but it makes it a more acceptable message when it's coming from somebody who's in the same spot as you are. So peer education is a really potent force for good, if you like. And I would love to think that people listening to the show will get in contact with Hepatitis ACT or with Karma, the Canberra Alliance for Harm Minimisation Advocacy, and register for the workshop, get themselves involved, learn how the testing takes place, how the DAAs or the direct acting antiretrovirals take place, how to educate, how to know what we know or what peer educators know,
and really
become a peer educator themselves. It's a great idea and a great incentive. Hepatitis C, ACT and Karma, a combined project for people in the same place to learn how to become an educator. You probably will get, if you don't get anything else, you get the knowledge and the information you need to keep you and your friends safe, because hepatitis C is out there, gang.
We'll get some more details for next week's show.
And we will. We'll have a flyer. But 6253 3643, contact Karma and leave your number. If there's not somebody there to talk to you about it straight away, they'll get back to you and let you know when and where and how come and what's happening.
How to get involved.
Yeah. How to get involved. Very important.
All right. This next story is, I think, a very interesting one, Marion. It's written by Ian McPhee, who's a senior lecturer in drug and alcohol studies at the University of the West of Scotland. We've had quite a few stories from Scotland about, you know, their high overdose rates.
And really interesting.
Well, they're trying to respond.
Reporting on their stuff, don't they?
They're trying to respond.
Yes.
Anyway, this piece is entitled, it's in quote, "Only Junkies, How Stigma and Discrimination Link to Rise in Drug Deaths Amongst Scotland's Poor." And Ian says, for more than a decade, drug-related deaths, or DRD, in Scotland have been rising, alongside evidence which suggests that the country has had much less success in treating and supporting people who use drugs compared to the rest of the UK and Europe. The figures for 2019, which were released in December 2020, recorded 1,264 drug-related deaths, which was a 6% increase from 2018. This figure was a 100% increase on the 545 drug-related deaths recorded the previous decade in 2009. Wow. More than 70% of these deaths in 2019 were male, with more than two-thirds over the age of 35. For the last few years, the rise in drug deaths was attributed to an ageing community of drug users and unemployment stemming from UK austerity economic policies during the 1980s. In 2018, a team at the University of the West of Scotland investigated the ageing drug user narrative, which since 2017, the Scottish Government has considered to be anyone over the age of 35.
Wow.
We found evidence that the majority of drug deaths occurred amongst people living in specific postcode areas associated with high rates of inequality, while just 4% of deaths occurred in the most affluent areas of Scotland. So obviously an income and,
yeah,
and wealth.
Income related, by the look of it, yeah.
We were able to show that the rates of drug-related deaths within deprived communities were on a par with rates for heart disease and strokes.
Wow.
An important factor to consider was that budgets for alcohol and drug services in Scotland were significantly reduced between 2007 and 2019.
A change of government, I suspect, yeah?
Well, I think just general austerity programs throughout the whole of the United Kingdom. Down from £114 million to a reported figure of £73.8 million per annum. So quite a cut.
Yep.
We wanted to find out if there was any evidence linking funding cuts to the increasing rate of drug deaths. Another key issue was discrimination. This the idea that people who use drugs to cope with life and unresolved trauma are routinely described in policy documents and in the media as unproductive citizens.
Mm.
Throughout my time researching this topic, I've seen labels such as, quote, work shy, benefits scroungers, poor parents being applied, with the clear indication that people who use drugs are legitimate targets for discrimination or that somehow their lives matter less.
That sounds like dole bludgers
all over
in
the
Australia.
World. Yeah,
it's an international issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
Cuts and Consequences is the next title. In our 2020 paper, we reviewed the 2009 Audit Scotland report on drug and alcohol service provision, published after the Scottish Government released its 2008 drug strategy, The Road to Recovery. We also examined the 2019 Audit Scotland report and analysed the formula used to determine how funding is allocated to alcohol and drug partnerships, which then assigned money to local services. The 2019 Audit Scotland report indicated that annual funding of £73.8 million was being made available to services for drug-related issues. But our research, using the government's funding formula, indicated that the actual figure was closer to $53.8 million annually, which
wow.
is
way
£20
less.
Million yeah. pounds less.
From an already substantial cut, yeah.
The report's additional £20 million included £10 million per year allocated for 2 years to the Drug Deaths Task Force, an academic group that looks into research surrounding drug issues as opposed to a service on the ground for drug users. The organisation is considered by many working in the field to have been a political ploy by the Scottish Government to prevent a public health inquiry which would reveal that the bulk of drug deaths in Scotland were happening in areas of deprivation and poverty. The evidence indicated that 40% of people in crisis were leaving services in an unplanned manner, either because their needs were not being met or they failed to comply with treatment. Our evaluation of a rights-based advocacy service in South Lanarkshire, revealed that as well as deterring users, this loss of funding also led to many skilled professionals leaving the sector. And that's something we need to think about seriously here in Australia too, Geoffrey. What can the ambitions of professionals in the alcohol and drug sector be seen to be? Where does your ambition take you? Drug and alcohol
it's not
sector
a high status
seems to be
area, is it?
A dead stop, a full stop in people's career. It is not a stepping stone to anything in the way of promotion to a higher level. It's not considered one of the most useful areas or productive areas of to become trained and informed in. And it's certainly not one of the areas that you might do a swift 6-week run through to get some more skills if you're on a fast track to get through that glass ceiling, as they used to for women bureaucrats. Yes, they used to try and promote more women to higher levels by rushing them through various important areas of the bureaucracy so that they were skilled up to take up those positions. Drug and alcohol was not considered one of those areas and still isn't.
It's only people that have a passion or
that's a commitment
connection
to the area, some reason to be in there, or have experience of their own that renders them, they think, suitable to work in the sector. That's not necessarily the best reason to work in the drug and alcohol sector, whether it's peer education or not. The fact that you have had a drug and alcohol problem or been associated with drug and alcohol issues in your family or in your life doesn't necessarily render you the most talented person for a position in the drug and alcohol field. In fact, sometimes it works against people. The article goes on, we outline potential consequences associated with reducing funding to alcohol and drug services. Cuts led to closures of local independent services provided by highly trained staff. This meant that alcohol and drug services were being administered by centralised services such as the NHS and social work in locations that the most vulnerable and marginalised could not or would not travel to.
It's pretty depressing.
Indeed.
The next heading is, who cares if they die?
Mm.
The discrimination against drug users as lesser citizens succeeds in part because it is often reinforced in the media. To challenge this stigma, UWS, University of Western Scotland, west of Scotland, created an online event to make our research available and to provide a forum to discuss the risk factors for increased drug-related deaths.
Good on them.
Mm. It's really...
It's what we need is that kind of feedback.
Proactive
and
stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's find out what people are saying out there.
Exactly.
What a unique and interesting concept. Find out what people are saying and doing.
Yeah.
What's happening on the ground?
In December 2019, the day before the new DRD drug-related deaths figures were released, we promoted a conference titled, Who Cares If They Die? They're Only Junkies. Designed to provoke, the title highlighted the stigma and negative labels routinely applied to drug users.
Great idea.
It's really, really good. We explained how our research provided strong evidence that the rise in drug-related deaths was connected to cuts to treatment and support services funding, as well as the centralising of services and the reliance on unpaid volunteers.
Indeed.
That's the other thing. There's a lot of people that get essentially exploited because they care.
We have an organisation absolutely dedicated to promoting volunteerism in the community, and who can afford? But you need somebody in an organisation to coordinate the work of volunteers. Otherwise, and most organisations
don't make the effort
to coordinate volunteers.
Can't or don't make the effort or haven't got the funds.
No.
Following this event, we wrote an open letter to the First Minister of Scotland, outlining 10 recommendations to address the drug death crisis, with our findings and recommendations capturing significant attention from the media, the public and policymakers. Yeah. All along, we hope our research will have a positive impact on the lives of people who use drugs. So we hugely welcome First Minister Nicola Sturgeon's subsequent announcement to the Scottish Parliament that funding cuts to these services would in essence be reversed.
Good on her.
So they've had a positive...
I quite like Nicola Sturgeon, but I think that that's quite... It'd be honest, you know, it'd have to be honest and say that would be a response to the media pressure, to the public pressure to do something. But I do like the fact that at least she can be pushed into doing something by a media event like that, whereas we seem to find in
makes
Australia...
no difference.
People say, well, they would still say, but they're only junkies.
Yeah, that's right.
Would still have that response.
And the mainstream media would echo that.
Well, absolutely. Mainstream media would be saying that with, you know, with bells on.
Yeah.
They're just junkies.
Okay, Clutes, ensuring adequate funding for treatment and support services was our central recommendation, one that we believe will, now that it has been implemented, save lives.
So, and I agree with that, Geoffrey, but I would go on to say they have to think about. I mean, a strategy is really important. You have to not just re-establish funding, but you make sure that it's targeted,
yep.
that people have secure funding, because it's been one of the problems for the peer education organisations.
You get some, then it goes. Then it, yeah.
Every 3 years they have to reapply for their funding. They cannot be sure that their funding will recur. Just because they exist doesn't mean they're going to
survive.
Continue to exist.
That's a really good point, Mary. Well, we'll go to a quick song and then we'll wrap up this week's show.
Let's do that.
The Wind Cries Mary.
Oh,
so
great.
Do a shout out to Mary for that one.
Go for Jimmy.
Jimmy.
Haven't heard that one for a long time, Jeffrey. It was lovely. Mary, did you hear that?
Jimi Hendrix, The Wind Cries Mary. Look, I thought we haven't got much time, but there's some letters to the Sydney Morning Herald.
I'm glad you brought this up, Jeffrey, because I wanted to make comment about Britney's, you know, and about the culture and about the sexual assault
and the
what
number of women
accepting.
Coming forward too. Yeah, anyway, this letter writer, Therese Curtis, says, "Congratulations, Jenna Price, for your article about alcohol being weaponised in sexual assaults. During my teaching career, I've been a chaperone teacher at many Year 12 formals. A number of times I've volunteered to drive young women home who were too intoxicated to stand, let alone protect themselves. Comparing apples with oranges is usually unhelpful. However, would you expect to emerge unhurt from racing across a busy freeway or jumping into a lion's den? In an ideal world, young people don't engage in underage drinking, adults drink moderately, they don't mix intoxicating substances, and all men are respectful of others. As our ideal world is unattainable, people of all ages must heed the advice not to put themselves in harm's way."
Yeah, no, very pertinent. That's Therese Curtin from North Sydney. So another letter, "As a safety measure, Price advises females to, quote, get plastered with your women friends, end quote. What a commentary on the Australian attitude to alcohol, normalising drunkenness." Well, we have normalised it. Anyway.
Well, it has been for a long time.
"Are so many people devoid of social skills that the only way they can fit in is to guzzle and swill till unconscious? A sad reflection on our society." This is by Wendy Crew from Lane Clothed North. Now, my feeling about this is that we have normalised
alcohol use. It's part of the culture.
And really, if you talk to young women or even older women, ask them, what was their first sexual experience like? They might tell you they wouldn't remember because they were so intoxicated, and that was why they had their first sexual experience.
That's really sad.
Intoxication. It is sad. But there's also the idea that, okay, if you're intoxicated and thereby you have a sexual experience, who are you having a sexual experience with? Is it a man who's seeing that you are so intoxicated that you're prepared to accept sexual overtones or overtures?
Yeah.
Does he think that it's okay to assault you because you are so intoxicated, therefore you're putting yourself in a spot to be a target for sexual overtures? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's okay to sexually assault someone who's intoxicated.
It's not okay.
I'm sorry. It's not.
No.
Yeah. But we do have to be careful about how we think, how we talk about alcohol and intoxication, and whether it's sexual assault is not about sex, okay? It's about power. And about the imposition of one person's power over somebody who is powerless or not as powerful.
Yeah.
And I think we need to record that. Jenna Price writes some really interesting articles, I might add, two or three times. I've read her articles on Sunday and Canberra Times.
Yep.
They're really good, really on point. And she's, I would gather, very much a feminist. As a woman, it's very difficult not to be in this day and age, despite what Julie Bishop says. Particularly with this government, you really need to be an ardent feminist to get your point across, because I have not as yet heard anybody from Parliament apologise for the culture of sexual assault, bullying, violence, slut-shaming that we have heard the complaints of from many of the women parliamentarians.
It's an anti-women, unsafe, toxic workplace, isn't it?
And it's not the only place, but in our national parliament.
In national parliament?
That's rude.
That's a sad reflection on our country.
Very sad reflection. We don't do this last two quick.
Yep.
Yeah. Get plastered with your women friends and not with men, advises Price. Really? What about not getting plastered with women or men? George Fishman of Vaucluse, okay, an anti-drinker. My advice to young women, don't get drunk, don't go to secluded places after dark, and always look out for each other. You're more than equal, but you're seen as game. So that's Anne Matheson from
Gordon. Of course you want to look out for your friends.
Those letters are all from North Sydney, you notice?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so they're all a bit preachy.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Don't
get drunk.
Yeah.
Okay, don't have a good time. Don't do anything that you might... Don't do anything that the boys do, because then you're just fodder for them.
But what about changing the culture and the attitudes and the acceptability of that sort of behaviour?
Three out of those four letters, Geoffrey, were from women. And I just think, vote whichever way you want, darling, but don't blame women for being targets
don't
for sexual
blame.
Assault.
Yeah.
It's actually men who take advantage of women. If you get intoxicated, you should not expect to be raped
because it's not an open invitation to assault. Yeah.
Don't put a sticker on your head saying, drunk, please have sex with me.
It's just...
That's wrong.
It's wrong.
Wrong assumption.
Yeah. It's pure.
Yep.
Purely wrong, straight up. And we've got a lot of work to do in our society.
We do have a lot of work to do, but until our government acknowledges that the problem is there, the work is never going to start.
Yeah.
Yeah?
That's a really good point. All right. Well, thanks again, Marion, for another
darling,
news from the Double Front.
Week. We've had some interesting – had a great chat this week. I've had a wonderful show.
Yeah.
Our love out to Jude, as always, and to everybody else that we that's not in here in the studio with us. If we could fit you all in here and we could sing together, we would, but we can't. So we just send you our love and look after each other.
Yeah.
Stay safe till next week when we talk to you again.
Look after each other and – call Karma if you need any
information. If you need assistance, you need help, you need information, ring Karma on 625-33-643 and we will tell you more about the Hep C Council initiative with Karma next week.
Yeah. No, that's really exciting.
It's exciting, isn't it? It's good to hear they're doing something
that's
together.
That's the sort of initiative that is actually going to break through.
It is going to make a big difference. The more we do networking projects, the better our services will be.
Yeah. Exactly. No, well said. Okay.
Are we just about up to time?
Just
or
about
have
up
I not
to time.
Counted you in?
I've got about 25 seconds and then I'll play the theme song from the show, which is Golden Brown.
Okay, with it being that 20 seconds, police should carry drugs, overdose, antidote, says a senior officer, and we can only agree with that. Might suggest, Geoffrey, you put that on the website.
Absolutely,
and really we should push the police to carry naloxone.
Absolutely.
Because it's the only thing. They're often the first people
first
that
person
turn
on the
up.
Scene.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's so
So we
true.
Need them to reverse the overdose effects.
All right, we will be back again next Tuesday. Stay safe, and here's
Please.
The Stranglers.
Bye
for now.